Now on The Pulse, useful and healthy information for you and your family. It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio and the Northeast Delta Dental Team.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio. And of course, my real job is president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, the area's largest dental insurance carrier. And I'm also the chair of the State Board of Education. So my two main fields, healthcare and education, certainly are always in the news, keeping me quite busy. But as everybody also knows, we sponsor many, many road races, including the Capital Area Race Series. And I just want to remind my running friends that the next race in the series is actually next weekend, Saturday, May 10th, and that's at the Canterbury Shaker Village, and that starts at 10 a.m. It's hard to believe it's already May 3rd and 4th. I also want to alert folks that you will not see me at that race. It's the first one I've missed because my youngest daughter, Gabby, who also likes to run, she is actually graduating from the University of Richmond, and so If I wanted to keep the peace and harmony in the family, of course, I had to fly down to Richmond next weekend. So I'm going to miss the Canterbury Shaker Village. However, I want a great turnout. So if you make it up to Canterbury, that's at 10 a.m. on Saturday, May 10th. That would actually be wonderful. It's a totally unpaved course. It's totally beautiful. And those of you that run it know that there's also lots to do after the race. So that's the fourth out of seven races. Also, as some of you heard yesterday on yesterday's show, we had Curtis Barry on, and we were talking about the Kentucky Derby. So later today, when you listen to the, either watch the Kentucky Derby or listen to it on radio, it's the only horse race, by the way, that I actually watch. You can see if Curtis's prediction was correct. I also want to put a plug in for the Arthritis Foundation. At Northeast Delta Dental Stadium on June 8th, we have the Walk to Cure Arthritis. That's on Sunday, June 8th, so it's about a month away. And if you're interested in signing up to walk and raise money for the Arthritis Foundation, the phone number is 224-9322. That's 224-9322, or you can go on the arthritiswalkprizes.org. website and register that way. And last week's show of the weekend, we had the folks from the Arthritis Foundation. And one thing I learned in the course of that communication is that juvenile arthritis is actually more prevalent than juvenile diabetes. I didn't realize that. So it's one of those illnesses, though, particularly as an adult, that people tend to want to not talk about. And so one of my goals is to really educate the populace in New Hampshire about the how arthritis needs to be addressed, and we need to educate the population on that. So here we are, May 3rd, May 4th. I know April has been kind of cold in New Hampshire, and one of the purposes of this show, as just mentioned, is to educate. And with me, I have a special guest today who on this early May weekend is willing to spend some time with me, and that is Dr. Betsy McCoy, who was a constitutional scholar and patient advocate. And some of you know, because Betsy does spend some time in New Hampshire, she is also the former lieutenant governor of New York. And Betsy's recent book called Beating Obamacare is a really good primer on understanding the Affordable Care Act and how to protect you from, you know, landmines, so to speak. And as everybody knows, back on April 10th, we put on a huge conference at Southern New Hampshire University with close to 200 people who had many, many, many questions about the Affordable Care Act. So I would recommend Betsy's book, and I'll talk to her about the title, because even though it sounds like we're beating Obamacare, it's more of a primer and handbook on the Affordable Care Act. So, Dr. McCoy, welcome, and may I call you Betsy?
Yes, and I'm really glad to be talking with you. I spend a lot of time in New Hampshire. I'm coming back on May 9th to spend time with my friends over at the Seacoast Women's Republican event, and then I'll be back later in May to do a fundraiser for Liberty Harbor Academy. So It's nice to be talking with you today, and I hope I see you in New Hampshire soon.
I hope so. And in fact, just last weekend, I was at the Seacoast Science Center running a road race for the sea mammals, so to speak. And I did not plan this, but running side by side with me was Scott Brown. And for those of you that don't know, he actually is a very good athlete, and I did my best to keep up with him. I actually finished a little bit behind him, but he ran the 5K very well and was really just doing it, as a fitness run. So let's get back to you, Betsy. So your history, I mean, how did you get involved with wanting to, write a book on the Affordable Care Act? And I know that the Affordable Care Act document is over 2,500 pages. It's unclear to most of us whether, the political leaders in Washington actually read it. But
clear they didn't, actually. And that's a very important point. I'm glad you raised it, because way back at the founding of our country, the chief architect of the Constitution, James Madison, explained in Federalist 62 that it was pointless for the framers to give the new nation a representative government, a Congress to make the laws, an elected body to make law, if in turn that body created laws that are so voluminous, that's the word Madison used, so voluminous that no one can read them, or so frequently changed that no reasonable person can know what the law is. That is Obamacare to a T.
So if it was unreadable, how did you, and I really mean this, because this is my career. I mean, basically, I've been in group healthcare since, and I know this is changing, but, for most of my professional career, most of healthcare benefits have been through the employer. So when I started my professional career in 1978, this is all I've been doing. And I have all 2,572 pages, a link, on my iPad. And I actually have read it several times. But how were you able to take 2,500 pages and put it into such a nifty handbook that everybody can understand? Because as Mark Twain once said, I mean, to actually write shorter and more succinct is actually more
takes
difficult.
Takes a lot more time.
Exactly.
But this is my training. I have a PhD in constitutional history. I've been reading bills of this nature my entire adult life. And I've written several hundred articles about the Affordable Care Act. So I had a lot of practice succinctly summarizing what the law says. But I do believe that Congress should have put it in a paper shredder and given us a 20-page bill in honest, plain English that members of Congress would have read before they enacted it, because the truth is that even today, most members of Congress do not know what this law says.
Now, when we've talked before, Betsy, you've made it clear, and I agree with you completely, that as detailed as that law was, over 2,500 pages, through executive orders and other sort of nuances, what now is in play is a lot different than the original law. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Oh, yes. The health reform that's being rolled out now by the White House bears little resemblance to the Affordable Care Act as enacted in 2010. And most of the changes, I would say about 30 out of the 38 major changes to this law, have been made just by the president, by the executive branch, by fiat. And so, in a sense, in a very clear sense, they're illegal, because, as you know, under our Constitution, the legislature, the Congress, is vested with the authority to make the law, and the Constitution says that the president's job is to see that the law is faithfully executed. The president has some discretion about how laws are executed. Presidents have to make priorities when things get done. But this president has, unfortunately, eliminated over half the deadlines in the law and changed many, many fundamental features of the law. And that's why I wrote a second book, Beating Obamacare 2014, because my original book described what the law said. The new book describes what's happening now.
Okay, so if I'm an employer now, 50 to 99, so what's the latest biggest impact for me in terms of the change?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that, because many of the newspapers said the employer mandate was postponed, and that's only slightly true. It's the mandate has not been postponed. Instead, what the president did by regulation, contrary to the letter of the law, was to say employers with 50 to 99 employees who currently don't provide coverage don't have to next year. So they got a pass. But employers who do currently provide coverage must continue to provide it. And this is why many people, perhaps as many as 25 to 30 million, who get their coverage on the job right now are going to lose it in the coming months, because their employers buy coverage in the small group market. They don't self-insure. They buy small group plans. Those plans are expiring in the coming months, and those insurance companies aren't going to rewrite those plans. They're not going to renew them. So then employers are stuck between a rock and a hard place. They can either pay for the far more costly Obamacare-mandated essential benefit package, or they can say, I can't afford that. I'm going to pay the penalty and send my workers and their families onto the state exchange to buy insurance.
And what's the status? I mean, the two exchanges, obviously, the individual exchange and the small business health option or SHOP exchange. Can you, for the listening audience, define those two? And then we'll go.
Well, the major exchange, the one that most people read about in the newspapers, for individuals. In addition, there's something called a SHOP exchange. It's more or less a temporary thing, and it hasn't had a big impact. It hasn't really taken off because there were so many regulations limiting what kinds of small businesses can get subsidies in the SHOP exchange, which is just designed for business, that not very many businesses signed up.
Okay, so before we go to commercial break, if someone wants to purchase Beating Obamacare 2014, and again, and we'll talk about the title after the break, but
plug that book.
Well, it's really a handbook. I mean it. I don't necessarily like the title, but the handbook, as a handbook, it's great. Is it on Amazon?
It is. It's on Amazon.com, or you can patronize your local bookstore and get it, or get it on BarnesandNoble.com.
And can
That's right. Many different ways to do it.
And spell your last name, because if someone...
That's the whopper, isn't it?
Exactly.
MCCAUGHEY.
Great.
McCoy.
And that's Beating Obamacare 2014.
That's right.
We'll return after commercial break. Tom Raffio with Dr. Betsy, the real McCoy.
Hi, I'm Lisa, your Delta Dental Benefits rep. Any questions today?
How long should I brush my teeth for?
2 minutes.
Why should I visit the dentist?
Professional preventative care promotes good oral health.
What's the most popular color of toothbrush?
Blue.
She's good.
As the most experienced dental benefits company, Delta Dental delivers unmatched local service. So enrollees feel taken care of every time.
Visit Northeast Delta Dental at nedelta.com.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and with me this early May weekend is Dr. Betsy McCoy, spelled MCCAUGHEY, and I mention that because if you go on Amazon.com, you can find her book called Beating Obamacare 2014, which is really more of a handbook to how to avoid the landmines and protect your health and income. So, Betsy, we're both authors, so tell us about the derivation of the title, and then I want to ask you about the future of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, of course, Beating Obamacare, it sounds like a political book, and in fact, this book isn't. It's more, as you very clearly put it, it's a handbook. My publisher wanted a snappy, aggressive title. I wanted to call it Outsmarting Obamacare, because the fact is people need to know things, practical things, they can do to get around some of the worst aspects of this law, even some of the unintended consequences. I'll give you an example. Most of us confide things to our doctor. We wouldn't tell anybody else. But under the Obama health reform, this law and the stimulus law particularly, doctors are being financially pressured to enter all of your medical information into an interoperative electronic database. The idea is that everybody will have a page and this will be a nationwide system. Well, thousands of eyes will see these pages, right? So there's a reason to be very concerned about your medical privacy. If you're going to talk to your doctor about something you don't want anyone else to know, now is the time to say, Doc, let's keep two sets of books on this one. Don't put it in the electronic database. Doctors will not be offended or shocked by that. They have taken the Hippocratic Oath, and part of that oath is to keep your medical information private.
Okay, I can see why Mark Levin calls Betsy McCoy. You're called a national treasure. You have done you have done what every Washington lawmaker should have done, which is read the bill. So you know from reading my book and knowing a little bit about me and Northeast Delta Dental that with the Affordable Care Act, we just simply took the approach. We stayed out of the politics. We knew that as a dental insurance company that since the pediatric dental benefit was part of the mandated benefits, that we would be impacted by the Affordable Care Act. So we just simply took the approach that let's assume that the Supreme Court was not going to rule it unconstitutional. And I didn't think it was going to be ruled unconstitutional. Candidly, I was surprised with how it was because of Justice Roberts. I didn't think he was going to use the tax thing the way he did. But in any event, he took
the pretzel approach.
I think so. And then I know that the Governor Romney, when he was campaigning, I mean, he was very well intentioned and I think genuine about saying that he would repeal the Affordable Care Act. And as you know, Northeast Delta Dental in New Hampshire is considered one of the larger employers. So we actually had Governor Romney, as every presidential candidate comes through New Hampshire. And, you know, he and I had a conversation. And I think he was genuine that he felt that he could repair the Affordable Care Act. But I knew by then that with sort of the genie out of the bottle and with the whole infrastructure already kind of out there, that it wasn't going away. So our approach was kind of the Jim Collins, just kind of deal with the reality. So we got ourselves, you know, certified on the New Hampshire Exchange, which is using the federal software, healthcare.gov, and then our other state, Vermont, has their own state-based exchange. But in all three of our states, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, we just took the approach, let's deal with it. We got ourselves onto these exchanges, and we've actually had thousands of individuals purchase dental through the exchange, and then we created a private exchange called DeltaDentalCoversMe.com because I had kind of predicted in my mind that healthcare.gov would be very cumbersome early on. So we just asked people to go on to the private exchange because the dental premium is low. You're not going to get a tax credit. So in some respects, it sort of transformed our company and we just dealt, you know, with the reality of it. So my question to you, and I'm taking my board off in strategic planning in June, this week leading up to this first weekend in May, there's been a lot of talk about potentially Republicans thinking they could repeal the bill. My own personal opinion is again, the genie's out of the bottle and there's so much infrastructure out there that I don't see how that could happen. But you're the expert, so tell us kind of your view of the future.
Well, I do believe it has to happen. And let's not be misled by the fact that some 8 million people, according to the Obama administration, have signed up for the exchange plans. Even if that number is true, we're a nation of 318 million people, so we can't have the tail wagging the dog. We can look out for those 8 million people and make sure that they have coverage after repeal, but we shouldn't have those 8 million people compelling the other 310 million to live with a law that is contrary to their best interests. I would say the reason that we must repeal this law is that the fundamental framework of this law is corrupt. What do I mean by that? Well, the actual design of this law is to create a permanent Democratic majority. And here are the three pillars. The first is the navigators and assisters on these exchanges. Section 1311 of this law says that instead of government employees promoting Obamacare and helping people sign up for the plans, right, those jobs are reserved for community activists, for unions, for community health centers, for not-for-profits like the NAACP and Planned Parenthood and unions like SEIU, the big international union. Now think about it. Why would these jobs be outsourced? Because these not-for-profits and community activists can say and do things that government employees would never be permitted to say or do. And when you actually look at what's going on, the manuals to train these navigators and assisters, they're not just signing people up for health care. They're signing them up for food stamps, housing assistance, encouraging them to register to vote at the same time. When I see this going on in all 50 states, it reminds me of Tammany Hall. It's, remember, way back when, poorer people and new arrivals to the country would go to the local ward boss, get everything they needed in return for their vote. And the design of this, where these not-for-profits and community activists are paid out of our premiums, it's like providing a steady stream of funding to the shadow army of the Democratic Party.
Now, do you think the navigators and assisters, do you think, putting aside this other function that they've perhaps are doing, you think they are doing a good job of educating those most in need of going on to the exchange?
I think that's like saying to Mrs. Lincoln, all things aside, did you like the play?
Okay, that's a good one. Okay, now you mentioned two other pillars.
The second corrupt pillar is the bailout for insurance companies, Section 1342. After all, it was promised that this law would provide affordable plans, but the rules make it impossible for insurers to price their plans affordably. You have to cover very sick people for the same price as well people. It has to cover $100 billion in new taxes that are being posed on the insurance companies and passed on to consumers. And it has to cover a benefit package that includes many, many things that were not included in insurance before. So the insurance companies are being told, price it lower than you really need to price it to cover your costs. And John Q. Public's money will be used at the end of the year to make up for whatever losses you have. In other words, you're making the public pay to fool themselves. They're paying to make these plans affordable, and then they have to make up the difference to the insurance companies. That's an outrageous ruse.
Okay, so number three.
Okay, and number three is the false claim that the law is paid for. After all, reductions in future Medicare spending pay for over half this law, including a whopping 27% cut in Medicare Advantage plans. It's like robbing grandma to spread the wealth. But the cuts are so painful that the Obama administration has to keep postponing them in order to get Democrats elected. So there is nothing paid for about this law.
Okay. So do you think, one of my theories is that obviously any law that's 2,500 pages, and it is unfortunate that most political leaders perhaps didn't read it, but any law of that magnitude needs technical corrections. And I know the local regulators here in New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont, they were doing their best to interpret, you know, gray area and a lot of situations where even the definition of 50 was defined differently depending on, you know, which part of the law. That it seemed like the law was so hot that Democrats were unwilling, and as well as Republicans, to do the technical corrections, because if you were a Democrat trying to do a technical correction, the Republicans might accuse you of trying to expand the law, and conversely, if you were a Republican wanting to make those technical corrections, a Democrat would accuse you of wanting to repeal it. So the normal.
You know, you're too smart for this question. I'm going to answer it before you even finish.
Okay.
This is like looking at a car where the engine block is made out of marshmallows, where the steering wheel is attached to the exhaust pipe, right? And where all four tires have holes. And you're saying to me, well, I really like the CD player, so let's make a few technical corrections.
Okay. Well, the only thing I'm saying is that, because even way back, like in the Social Security law, when Republicans and Democrats could talk collegially, technical corrections were much easier to be made in laws. But in any event, okay. So when are you in New Hampshire next?
May 9th. I'm coming up for the Seacoast Republicans. And May 21st, I'll be doing a fundraising event for Liberty Harbor Academy. So I hope we can have lunch, break some bread together.
Exactly. But again, I want to recommend Betsy's book. Again, the title put aside the title, because as Betsy herself said, this is not a political book. This is a handbook. It's called Beating Obamacare 2014. You can get it on Amazon.com. And for someone that's read all 2,500 pages and has, this is my whole career, my whole professional career, I highly recommend this book. In fact, you're not going to believe this, Betsy, but it's on my night table. So it's true. So Dr. Betsy McCoy, and that's spelled M-C-C-A-U-G-H-E-Y, thank you for joining me in early May. This is Tom.
My pleasure. You're so well informed on this topic.
Thank you, Betsy. And I will return next week with another interesting guest, Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio.